This is Father Mike Russo, and this is Sunday to Sunday on Monday. My guest on Sunday to Sunday on Monday is my good friend, Father Ed Halterhoff. Hi, Ed. How are you?
Michael, how are you?
Well, you're in Morro Bay. We've only known each other since 1963. That's quite a long time.
Over 50 years.
Yeah, well, here we are, and we're still functioning. I should say that this is the day after Pentecost. Pentecost this year was on the 20th. This is May 21st. We're talking about Pentecost, and we're also talking about that other happening in St. George's Chapel in England, the marriage of Harry Windsor to Meghan Markle. But let's first talk about Pentecost. Preaching is a central piece of what we do. What did you preach about yesterday?
Well, the coming of the Spirit. But first I explained the original Pentecost, that it was a feast of weeks, because it was 7 weeks or 50 days after Passover, and explained that it was 50 days after Easter for us. And the word Pascua, for instance, in Spanish is the same as Passover is in so Easter and Passover have the same word in Spanish. And so that this is the seventh week, 50 days after Easter.
So it brings the Easter season to an end.
Right, I told them that, and the birthday of the church, the beginning of the church, with Pentecost.
One of the things that I looked at was the notion of apostolic courage, something that Pope Francis talks an awful lot about. How did you handle that, or did you?
I didn't. What I spoke about first was the symbols of the feast, the wind and breath. Inspire, perspire, respire, aspire, and that it all comes from the same word. And I then also talked about tongues of fire, and again, using other Latin languages, language, lingua, tongues, all the babble there with the different languages all being understood. Fire, and then I also did the myth of Prometheus, and that he robbed the fire from the gods, because fire is really one of the most important inventions of humankind. Someone said water, and I said, no, that's a natural gift. Fire was an invention. So fire is really very, very important. And so I wanted to deal with the terminology because it's with the symbols, because I thought that was important.
Yeah, I use the idea of breath, the fact that with apostolic courage, you can breathe life into old institutions, of which we have many. I mean, one of the great things about Pope Francis' most recent exhortation was that he argued that the church should not be a museum of memories. Good idea. And also, we have to breathe new life into the social institutions that can animate the gospel for people.
Well, I spoke about the Spirit coming to the church, to the contemporary church, as much as it came to the original church, and that we need the Spirit now to renovate the church, because we have problems in our contemporary church as the ancient church had. We certainly have the sexual abuse scandals, and I mentioned Pope Francis's handling of the Chilean crisis, that with great courage he apologized. He spoke to the victim, the three victims. He sent Archbishop Scicluna to Venice, to Chile, and that he also summoned the Chilean bishops, who all offered their resignations. So that this is all done under the inspiration or the motivation of the Spirit. So we need the church in our contemporary times to look at the issues we have, because we have issues just as much as the early church does, and issues that will divide us. So I thought so. I did mention the Spirit moving in our contemporary church.
Yeah, over the weekend I was able to take a look at this new documentary that just came out called Pope Francis, A Man of His Word, and it essentially functions as a he looks like a Jesuit retreat master sitting at a desk, actually recasting a lot of the his favorite moments in all of the four encyclicals or elocutions that he's given, everything from things on the environment to, joy of the gospel. And it was kind of interesting as well. I mean, it was a, for people who don't know Francis all that well, I think it was a good introduction. And for those of us who follow him closely, it was kind of an important piece. It may be able to be used in a parish for religious ed or what have you. But I do think that his idea of apostolic courage is the thing that animates him. In fact, his naming of new cardinals this weekend as well tells you that in one era, cardinals from towns like Milan or Venice would be cardinals. But now they have not been as recognized as some of the obscure people that Pope Francis is able to pull out of the woodwork and be made cardinals of the Catholic Church.
Well, in my column, because I write a column every week for the Bulletin, I did talk about Pope Francis's recent document, "Rejoice and Be Glad," and that I and it was a call to holiness, and that his call to holiness was really, I thought, very special, because he. He's trying to take it from a lay person's point of view. You don't have to be monastic. You don't have to retreat from the world. In fact, you get more involved in the world. You follow the Beatitudes. So this is how you are holy. You take care of the poor, the homeless, and you, especially by attending to them, the mandate of Jesus, this is how you actually make you become holy in today's world. A message I think very important.
So your message in your bulletin, is that the same as your expressions? Is that the same
right,
copy?
Exactly. Yep.
It's interesting to me that with the better preachers, by and large, are people who put out their homilies and in your case, and your thoughts pretty publicly. In fact, I could actually credit you with giving me this idea. For something that deals with preaching, well over 20 years ago, we were walking on the boardwalk in Santa Cruz, and I was saying, with all this new stuff that's going online, eventually you're going to have a lot of help with regard to homiletic preparation for Sundays. And indeed, it's a burgeoning industry, of which this is only one example.
Well, we certainly
need it. To you, Edward.
Oh, well, thank you, Michael. Thanks. Well, we certainly need it, Mike. And you have this great expertise, having taught communications for so many years, and having worked in the news professionally. I you're the right person to do this.
Well, you've taken over a parish. You've been there 20 years at St. Timothy's. Am I correct?
Right.
Yeah, 20 years of pastoring gives you a good insight into the people who are there and the people who you're trying to reach in your community. And that's, we're more senior priests at this point, hard to believe, but we've got at least experience on our side. Energy is something we need in great amounts if we're going to continue this work.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, sure.
I think that when you deal with people like a parish priest, you have a lot of material that you can use for preaching. So being a pastor should make you actually a better preacher, because it gives you real-life circumstances of people that you could use in your homilies in order to connect to people and inspire them. So I think it actually should be easier to, as I've told you many times, I don't really understand why people can't say something good every week, if not, in fact, every day, because, with what the Pope is writing, from their experiences, from their pastoral experiences. And like the parables of Jesus, he gives us a pattern on how to, a model of how to be, actually be able to preach. So one inspiring thought should not be difficult for a priest, especially parish priest.
And you've got to do it Sunday to Sunday, the very name of this program. It has to be something on your mind. And you're much like a writer in that sense. And I have so much material from a Sunday that my biggest problem is to cut it down to make it into beginning and a middle and an end. For example, this Sunday I used the phrase from John Updike, but it's actually from St. Paul's letter to the Thessalonians, do not stifle the Spirit. John Updike was once asked what was the best bit of advice he got from the New Testament, and he said it comes from St. Paul, don't stifle the Spirit. And then I kind of used that as a bit of a phrase to kind of bring in a number of pastoral examples of people who I think are doing extraordinarily important work as people of God. So let's, as we come to a conclusion here, let me ask you about the royal wedding and Bishop Michael Curry. You got to see it, I'm guessing, and any ideas about his presentation and his message?
I think it was the only unfortunate part of the entire wedding. Instead of acting like a presiding bishop, I felt he was a Baptist minister. He lost the attention of the people almost immediately. They weren't paying attention. I think even some people were laughing. I think his beginning with Martin Luther King was fine. His ending with Tay Hard was, by that time, he had lost everybody. He spent so long defining what Teilhard meant. He never referred at all ever to the bride and groom. He talked about love in a very abstract way, though in a fiery way. And he never referred to the death of the Princess Diana. He never referred to the charity work of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. I think that he didn't have any concrete examples. All he projected was this an emotion, and he was talking to some of the most elite people in the world who are the best at what they do, not counting the billion of people who are watching it, and I think he just missed his mark.
Yeah, certainly. I happened to get up in the middle of the night, and I turned it on, and he was actually preaching at that point. And I came into it, and I within 3 seconds, I realized he had lost the audience. He was destroyed by the cameras in a way, because they were looking at reaction shots, and of course, who do they focus on but the sisters or the daughters of Prince Andrew, who were at that point kind of giggling, I think. And I said, well, he's lost it. Interestingly enough, I watched it twice. I watched the whole thing on YouTube as a whole. And then by just circumstance, I turned on the BBC, and they were having a repeat. But interestingly enough, they edited out some of the reaction shots of the audience or the congregation in the choir. And they also edited him. They basically cut out the Teilhard de Chardin part, which I think had no place in there at all. By that point, he had done everything he could do to salvage what he was doing. But I agree with you. I think this, in great contrast to Bishop Chartres' magnificent homily for Kate and Prince William. And oddly enough, Bishop Sharp begins with the line from Catherine of Siena, be who God meant you to be, and you will set the world on fire. The very idea that he was trying to use with Teilhard de Chardin, but you're absolutely correct. By that point, I think he had lost it.
Yeah, it was unfortunate because it was a great chance for religion to get a message out to the entire world, and to the elite of the world, is to say that Christianity really has a message. I think it was a very lost moment. If you had given those 20 minutes to any ad agency, they would not have made that mistake.
Yeah, and of course, they would never give him 20 minutes. I mean, at best, you have 7 or 8, maybe 10 minutes. But he exceeded 15 by a little bit.
Right.
And yet there was no structure to it. So there was no beginning, middle, and end. And you're absolutely correct on one point. Who do you speak to in that venue? I think, first of all, you reflect the scripture. And they had precious little scripture for him to use, which I think was a mistake. There was nothing from the New Testament. And secondly, he should be speaking to them, as Bishop Chartres did in his homily to Kate and William. It's going to be a long time before we have another royal wedding, because unless we hang around for Prince George and Princess Charlotte. But I think it might have been a missed moment. The one thing I think about that wedding, I mean, beside the homily, the venue is difficult because of the choir stalls. But the thing that I liked the most was the beautiful music that was done by the young African-American cello player who did the Ave Maria, among other things. I thought he was spectacular, quite frankly.
He was spectacular. And what the royal wedding did is it broke down some of the barriers that exist and the prejudices. And we saw all these people there. We saw this black African-American, and we see a biracial duchess now. We saw this black presiding bishop. So visually it was fabulous. And I think that the royal family welcomes this biracial woman. I mean, if you compare this to Brexit, I mean, this is just so, it was astounding, really. But I think the presiding bishop did not do a religion of service, or the couple, because.
Well, the Archbishop of Canterbury certainly did, and Justin Welby. I'll leave you with this little thought of wisdom. Once Louis B. Mayer, the head of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, was asked about putting a message into a film so that people would get the message. I think when you try to put a message into a liturgy like this, as Louis B. Mayer said, if you're going to put a message anywhere, put it in a bottle and throw it in the ocean, because that sometimes can get lost. But you're right, quite right. They need a little bit more work on what they wanted to do and who would do it for them. And it may very well have been that some other role for Bishop Curry might have been better, but that it is what it is. And millions upon millions upon millions watched it.
Right. And so it's certainly a big step forward for the royal family and for England.
Well, my guest has been Father Ed Holterhoff. He is the pastor at St. Timothy's in Morro Bay. I want to thank Ed for his time. I also want to thank my podcast producer, Tyler Bindi, who is actually graduating St. Mary's College this week. And I also want to thank Ken Canedo, who provides us with his lovely music. This is Father Mike Rousseau for Sunday to Sunday on Monday.